Welcome to the first ever True Blue LA podcast. I'm Eric Steven. I've been writing on the site for a little over 4 years, and with me today is my co-host, Jacob Birch. Jacob, how are you?
I'm good, and I'm Jacob Birch. I've been not commenting on the site for the last 4 years. I think I got the first three trivia things you did right, and then you got bored of it because I kept getting it right, and you didn't do it again, and I had no reason to come back. That's all I came for.
There's a certain you know level of reward there where I can only come up with so many trivia questions, and then I actually forgot about it for a while. And then every time I would paste one, you would come up with the right answer. Yeah, I tried to come up with like some really hard ones, and you would always come up with the right answer. So I figured, hey, why not have this guy do the podcast with me?
Yeah, but I think it's also mortal payback for our second game we ever went to together. I think maybe third.
The NLCS 2008, is this what you're referring to?
Yeah. It was a game four, right? Because Hiroki won game three, so we were excited to tie the game up. Things were going well. And in game three, they introduced the lineups for the Phillies, and including all the bench players, and they announced Matt Stairs. And I was sitting next to you, and you happened to sort of roll off your tongue, oh, Matt Stairs, he's pretty good. They should use him. And then a game later in eighth inning, seventh inning? I have my scorebook.
I want to say the eighth. I can't say I have the box score up in front of me, but I want to say it was the eighth inning. It might have been the seventh.
Yeah, seventh or eighth inning. And I kept score that game, and you could see it was very normal writing, and I got very excited. Andre Ethier had a good hit, and it was just it looked like we were going to win the game. And then Matt Stairs hits this no-doubter home run, to which your only reply was, oh no, sort of under your breath. And then my writing became much lighter throughout, very polite almost writing in the rest of my scorebook while we left to a loss. So I've never forgiven
you. There's a decent chance, as I said, oh no, that may have been the only word said outside of the Phillies dugout in the entire stadium.
I've never heard the stadium that
heard or felt a stadium get the air sucked out of it like that home run. It was in the eighth inning, and it was against Jonathan Broxton. It traveled roughly 783 feet, I believe.
the official estimate.
Calculations are correct. And this is even worse. Like, okay, we all celebrate Kurt Gibson and all this, but he only had the one at bat against the A's. That was Matt Stairs' only at bat in that entire freaking series.
Was it? And of it might course, have been his only in the home entire run playoffs. And, it was just
nobody ever talks about the Shane Victorino home run earlier in the inning that tied the game off Corey Wade, but
which was this, the know, opposite was a, of a no a brutal, doubter. I remember brutal. It kept hooking right, and it looked like maybe it'd gone foul, maybe wouldn't get in, and then Shane did his little Hawaiian dance once it left and let you know that the game was tied.
Yeah, exactly. Well, to me, obviously the Stairs home run, gut-wrenching, and it was terrible. But the memory for that night for me is as we were walking to our car, there was, like, you know, imagine 50,000 people just sort of catatonically walking out at the same time, and one random fan out of nowhere just said, God damn it, Kershaw, like he was the actual reason for the loss. Like, I think he pitched in the sixth inning because Derek Lowe was on 3 days rest, so they cut him short, and Kershaw faced like three batters or something. So he wasn't exactly the reason for the loss, but, you know, it was just funny that
how, gotta blame the young guy.
Yeah, anger can get a little misplaced, but I don't know. Fun times. Kershaw, as it were, would have been eligible for arbitration this year. How do you like that for a segue?
Yeah, that was good.
He signed a 2-year deal last year, so no arbitration for Kershaw this year. But the Dodgers did have two guys eligible for arbitration, and as expected, they settled with both of them on Friday. AJ Ellis and Ronald Belisario were both Super 2s. They were in the top 22% of their service class of guys of at least 2 years, but not 3 years of service time. So they get an extra fourth year of arbitration. You know, in some cases that means a big payday. Like if you're like Buster Posey, he's a Super 2 and he won MVP. So he started out at like $8 million. Ellis is a little bit more reserved. First year starter, 31-year-old. He got $2 million, but you know, think of it from his perspective. He made $490,000 last year. He spent about 9 years in the minors. So if you can pull down $2 million for doing what you do, that's a pretty sweet gig.
Especially when you had the idea you may be a career minor leaguer for probably quite a while.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, he said as much this week. You know, a certain time, you know, through his career, he thought, well, I don't know if I'm ever going to be a major leaguer, and it's all just sort of gravy for me. And you kind of have to. It's hard not to love that attitude he has about it. And on sort of the opposite end of the spectrum is Ronald Belisario, who maybe doesn't cherish the little things as much as one might think. He spent all of 2011 not with the Dodgers. He was having trouble getting a visa to get out of Venezuela, and turns out that was probably the result of a positive cocaine test. And but he you know, sort of bucked the odds and came back and was like a rock in the bullpen last year. He served a 25-game suspension to start the year. But he led the league, or excuse me, led the team in games pitched. Even with that 25-game suspension, he was a go-to guy in the seventh and the eighth inning. He's about as solid as you can expect, and he got a nice little raise to $1.45 million. Now it's just a matter of will he show up to camp on time. But, you know, that's not so bad for him.
What did he make in the settlement?
Oh, $1.45 million.
Yeah. I'll take it.
It's not bad when you can triple your salary from the previous year.
So can I try a segue? Can I do that?
Yep.
I was going to say, so cocaine, hell of a drug. May one make one even want to do wheelies on a motorcycle if you're living in Sacramento?
It may make one want to do or think they're doing wheelies when they're not doing wheelies. But, you know, Justin Sellers had a rough Saturday. He's in Yolo County, which is sort of funny if you think about it, because at times, pretty much since the new Dodger ownership has come in, Guggenheim Partners, we've sort of laughed that they're spending money like you only live once. And I don't proclaim to know the acronym enough to use it, nor am I a rap star of any renown.
You just don't want to go on recording having said it. I know you say it in your free time.
Well, obviously, yeah. A day doesn't go by where I don't say YOLO, nor live by that prophecy, but it's just sort of funny to me. But I guess, you know, we don't want to laugh too much about the Sellers incident, because he's like popping wheelies and reckless driving in a residential neighborhood. Obviously, it's not safe. And the worst part for me is that, like, the cops had been looking for him for a while, and, like, it's been a repeated pattern. And they chased him, and, like, I mean, I guess it's hard to get away in a chase, but it would seem to me if you're on a motorcycle, that'd be one of the easier things to get away on. But I don't know. So he was arrested. Three different TV stations in Sacramento reported it. He was booked at Yolo County Jail, which is still fun to say. And it's one of those things, like, you know, it probably doesn't mean a whole lot. The Dodgers aren't even commenting on it. We asked them, and they said, you know, no comment for now. But he's sort of on the fringe of the – he's on the 40-man. He does have three options left, but he's sort of on the fringe of the roster. Like, he's pretty well down the depth chart. He's more of a defensive guy. He did make the opening day roster last year, but – you wonder now if, like, I would imagine they might sign a player or two still for the bench, and if they're looking for a guy to sort of trim off the 40-man, the Sellers, this kind of thing just sort of makes it a little bit easier, like, you know, for them to make that kind of a decision. I'm not saying that that's like the final death blow, but it certainly didn't help for sure.
My only comment on the whole story is I saw the headline. And the headline I saw was Dodgers Sellers, you know, booked in Sacramento. And I've gotten so accustomed in this day and age of seeing sports star gets booked and it's sexual assault, like Michael Crabtree, or it's domestic abuse, like our friend Milton Bradley, or it's you know, any number of very sort of serious allegations. And while unsafe and not worth repeating, hearing that it was doing wheelies in Sacramento at least made me laugh.
Yeah, that's true. It's on the small scale of what the good versus evil spectrum, I guess. Is that
right? It's not a Brett Myers sort of level offense, but
exactly. You know, talking about sort of the fringes of the roster, actually created a section on the site devoted only to non-roster invitees, which is, you know, surprisingly more thrilling than one might think. This season, I mean, it's been, you know, in a lot of years, you have a pretty good chance for a couple guys making the team as a non-roster guy. Jeff Weaver did it famously. Chan Ho Park in recent years. Mike McDougall, Jamie Wright. Jamie Wright's done it like seven straight years with six different teams, and he's probably going to do it an eighth straight year this year with somebody. But like this year, they sort of go in, you know, they have like, I believe they have 25 guys under contract right now. That includes Tony Gwynn, who's technically not on the roster, but your roster is basically set. I mean, outside of maybe one or two spots, but so like their non-roster invitees are, you know, have maybe less of a shot of making the team than most teams. But for me, this last week, the two they added were like the two that have the best shot of maybe gaining a spot on the major league team. They added Peter Moylan and Jesus Flores, both part of the reason they're on roster guys is that they're both coming off injuries and been sort of either surgeries or injury plagued the last 2 years. Moylan has had shoulder issues. Actually, he had back surgery in 2011 and then shoulder surgery later that year. He's only pitched like 13 innings the last 2 years, but basically every year of his career in Atlanta, he's been, you know, very solid, one of the most ground ball heavy relievers you're going to find. For me, I think of all the non-roster invitees, if Moylan's healthy, I think he has a chance to make it, even with as many relievers as the Dodgers have signed. And then Flores, I guess, the Dodgers are going into the spring with Tim Fedorovich as sort of the lead man for the backup catcher role, but they put up four guys as his competition. Jesus Flores, Eliezer Alfonso, Wilkin Castillo, and Ramon Castro. Not a lot of huge names there. So, I mean, honestly, like, I think unless they absolutely want Fedorovich to play every day in AAA, that's a quartet that I think he can beat for the backup job. So, I mean, Flores has a decent shot of beating him, but wouldn't surprise me to see Fedorovich winning that spot. Do you have any thoughts on either of those guys?
Not in particular. The only thing on the catcher competition, like you said, it's the whether or not it's if they like FedEx a lot, I think they might even go with Flores so he can play every day. But it kind of you get the impression that they like him okay. They like him as this sort of backup catcher role, and maybe he'll blossom. But it doesn't sound like anyone's too high on that, and they'll just kind of ride Ellis until. For as long as he'll last, until they have to solve that issue elsewhere. And I'm rooting for Moylan, just with my love of sidearm pitchers. But in general, seeing the Dodgers front office dedicate so much, maybe even foolish money to the bullpen, clearly shows that they're making it a priority. Whether or not it's going to be money wise spent, we'll see. But
yeah, and not to mention the fact that we can practice our terrible Australian accents.
It's so, and I actually didn't think this was going to be a transition, but it is actually. Is he pitching for Australia and the WBC?
Ooh, that is a perfect segue, and yes, he is. Moylan is in the World Baseball Classic for Team Australia. There were no Dodgers on Team USA, but they have, I believe, I want to say eight in the system who are playing for a World Baseball Classic team somewhere. In fact, I just pulled up the list. So, yeah, we have Moylan for Australia. Ronald Belisario is pitching for Venezuela. Hanley Ramirez for the Dominican Republic. We have Adrian Gonzalez and Luis Cruz for Team Mexico. And then Fernando Valenzuela is a coach for Team Mexico. That's always cool. Paco Rodriguez is suiting up for Spain. And, of course, Nick Punto was on Team Italy. So clearly driving them to gold. But then the one guy, I mean, I can't say I know too much about. We have to maybe have Brandon Lennox on at some point. But double-A infielder Felipe Buren is playing for Brazil. So, you know, something to watch. Like, who knew, like, in 2000 – it's not that long ago, 2009 – I sort of like to watch the Dodger guys on other countries, and I remember the Netherlands had this catcher who couldn't hit for much, but he was throwing out runners at some crazy rate, and he looked awesome behind the plate, and it happened to be Kenley Jansen, and sure enough, 4 years later, that arm is one of the top 10 relievers in baseball per MLB Network. I think he just had on the other day, they have their top 10 relievers and top 10 starters, and nice to see Kenley on there. But for the WBC, Hanley Ramirez is on the roster for the Dominican Republic, and I think Steve Dilbeck in the LA Times wrote something the other day basically saying it's going to hurt the Dodgers or him during spring because he's going to be away so much. Like, you know, the Team USA, Team Mexico, and Canada and Italy, they're all playing in Arizona in these rounds, but the Dominican is not. So he's going to actually be traveling and going places for two different times, and he's going to be away from spring training for longer periods of time. And he's not, if I'm have this correct, he is not playing short for Dominican Republic, and I don't know who is. But the point is, every second that Ramirez is away, he's not playing short, which is a sort of planned position for him, even though he's, you know, by all accounts, not a good shortstop. And the thought is that, you know, that's going to hurt the Dodgers. But to me, it's like he's going to play short no matter what. It's not like they're going to be like, oh, he only played 10 games at short and during spring, so I guess we can't put him there. He played there the last 2 months of the year. I think they're just going to ride it out unless – I mean, certainly the possibility is there if D. Gordon can somehow regain his status as a prospect or – in the good graces and to where they count on him to play every day. And because honestly, the lineup works best if D. Gordon was actually a good leadoff hitter and they could just plug him in at short and have Hanley at third. But I don't know. To me, it doesn't seem like a big deal that Ramirez is going to be missing all this spring training, but I don't know. What do you have? You have any thoughts on that?
Just real quick. It's probably going to be Jose Reyes at short for the Dominican.
Okay.
Although,
so it's basically the Marlins all over again.
Yeah. The interesting is Hanley, I wonder if he'll DH because they have Adrian Beltre to play third. And, you know, as you would expect of a Dominican roster, it's fairly stacked. So
yeah.
He and Adrian, depending on who's feeling hot or who doesn't want to risk injury, they'll probably split time between third and DH because I'm looking at the list now and I don't see anyone else that jumps out as a Mutz to DH figure. So
that makes a lot of sense.
From there, I don't know. I think it's that we're almost in February, so we're entering that time where storylines in baseball get completely blown up, whether it be the guy who lost 10 pounds of weight, thinking of Russell Martin in 2010 or whatever it was. And then it ends up just not mattering. Baseball players are going to be what they are, and a little bit of travel or a little bit of weight gain or a little bit of weight loss doesn't seem to shift things all that much.
Yeah, I agree. And just you made me think of the annual best shape of his life. We should make a point to keep track of those. Those are always fun. Actually, the funny part last year, last year I went to spring training. I was there for all 6 or so weeks, and it was awesome. It was a great experience. I'm doing it again this year. Looking forward to it. I can't say enough how awesome it is. But last year in camp, Russ Mitchell, Speaking of like fringe roster guys, he looked awesome. Like he was literally in the best shape of his life, and he was in minor league camp within like a week or two. So, you know, it's one of those things. Hey, it's great, you know, but there's a lot more to baseball than not. I'm not saying people shouldn't show up in shape. I'm certainly not going to be in the best shape of my life, but you know, it's just one of those things that's sort of fun to watch. But back to Hanley for a second. I just think, you know, you mentioned him being designated hitter. That's the thing for me this year. Like, all this sort of hand-wringing over where Hanley plays, it's going to matter. I mean, for me, he has to hit. Like, I don't – his defense is not going to, like, for me, make or break his season, whether he's at third or short. He has to hit. Like, really struggled in the last month. He was good for the 6 weeks or so leading up to that last month. But I'm going to be more concerned with his bat than where he plays this year, I think. But I don't know. That maybe that's just me.
And I think that – no, I think that's with everyone. Especially it's not like you're going to be getting too much of an upgrade sort of overall no matter who plays short. It's not like you've got this medium hitting defensive whiz kid who's going to play short instead. You know, you're going to probably get a loss of wins over replacement if Hanley is hitting, and you're going to be able to get that practice in, whether it's in the WBC or whether it's in spring training. For me, any concern over players playing in the World Baseball Classic is I'm much more concerned about pitchers, just because of the cap they're on. It's screwing up with their routine throwing schedule. But when it comes to hitters, they're going to rake no matter what.
Right. And then, like, the only three pitchers the Dodgers have are all relievers, and they don't – I mean, they're on a sort of a weird schedule anyway. I think they'll all be fine.
Yeah.
And you sort of mentioned, you know, getting ready. The Dodgers have – I mean, in aside from WBC, the Dodgers do have a lot of questions sort of going into spring training injury wise. I know this wasn't sort of on our schedule going in, but you know, Matt Kemp over the weekend, he was at the Grand Marshal in the Kingdom Day Parade on Saturday in LA, the Martin Luther King Parade. And he talked to reporters and said, you know, he's focused on getting ready for opening day, not so much for spring training. And I think there's a good shot that he's going to miss, like, you know, pretty good chunk of time, just sort of still in sort of rehab mode. He'll work a lot in the cages and do things like that, but I don't know how much game time he's going to see during spring training. And then you have Carl Crawford. He had Tommy John surgery in August. He's sort of in that same boat. They say his bat is going to be ready well ahead of his arm. He wasn't much of a thrower to begin with, but I think they would sort of stick him in the outfield as long as his bat was ready. So it strikes me that, like, they could go into spring training and you're probably not going to see, like, if you're planning a trip to spring training thinking I'm going to see Etier and Crawford and Kemp in the outfield, I don't know if that's going to happen that all that often. I mean, maybe a few games here and there, there could be a lot of sort of outfield playing time to go around during spring training. And it's sort of, well, that's one of the sort of interesting storylines that I think we'll have to follow in the next few weeks.
Well, I'm excited for the Skip Schumacher era, if that's the case.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. When's the last time the Dodgers had I mean, you could argue over how well he plays second. But when's the last time they had like a legitimate like second base / outfielder? I always like that combo. Did you ever play what was it? Baseball Mogul or either Baseball Mogul or Out of the Park Baseball?
No,
either
only, one of those. The Ken Griffey Jr. 64 is the only real baseball game I played really heavily.
That, Baseball Stars. But if you could find a second base / outfielder, I always sort of like that combo for some reason. Don't ask me why. I don't have. There's no rational defense I have of it. But
we could have given Jeff Kent a shot at that. I think that would have worked well. Putting a statue out there, put him in center. It'd be fun to watch.
Yeah, can you imagine, like, the Angels could afford to do that, right? Like, they have Peter Borges and Mike Trout. They could probably cover the entire outfield among them. Like, they could totally afford to put Jeff Kent in center. I would pay to watch that. So, you know, talking about these injuries, and I still think the Dodgers aren't done yet. I mean, I don't have any inside information on this, but I would imagine they're still probably going to sign at least one more bench player. We all sort of think, oh, you know, right-handed outfielder would be great, and everyone sort of zeroes in on Scott Hairston as sort of the annual guy we look at, and he hit 20 home runs last year. You know, didn't hit a whole lot in terms of on-base percentage, but he hits lefties, and that's sort of what they need. And I don't necessarily think all of a sudden they're going to start platooning Andre Ethier because of it, but, you know, it would be nice to have some right-handed power off the bench. But maybe that right-handed power comes in a different form. There was mention last week of Scott Rolen. That really hasn't progressed. Bill Shaken talked about it. Buster Olney talked about it. Mike Petriello at Mike Socha's Tragic Illness talked about it. All is sort of, this could be happening, but it sort of went by the wayside. So you never know. It's another guy, older guy, betting on health. And, hey, if he's healthy, it's great. If not, who knows? But I don't know. I think they're probably going to add another player or two in the next week here.
If Rolland got traded, what would be the corresponding move in your mind, both what you want and what you think would happen?
Yeah, I mean, this is where, so as of right now, that's sort of the good question. Right now, the bench is essentially quote unquote set, but although I don't think it's set, they have five bench guys basically set in that. Jerry Hairston Jr., one, Skip Schumacher, the aforementioned grit master, fellow grit master Nick Punto, and then you have the backup catcher spot, whether it's Tim Fedorovich or one of the four guys they signed as non-roster invitees. And then Juan Uribe, who's making $7 million next year, or this year. Wow, it's this year now. My God. But, you know, for me, the easy choice is obviously, you know, dump Uribe. You could actually make a reasonable argument that his upside is larger than Punto's, and if you want to do that, that's fine. But just the simple fact that he started one time in the last 66 games of the year. He had one plate appearance and played in one game off the bench in the last 34 games of the year. It's not like we're saying this guy's worthless. It's that Don Mattingly will go out of his way to they had so many opportunities last year to dump Uribe. There was a point when Adam Kennedy went on the disabled list in July. They needed a corresponding roster win. It ended up being I think it was that Tony Gwynn Jr. getting designated for assignment.
That sounds right.
They're all sort of running together for me now. But the point is, like, they had shots last year to sort of dump Uribe, and they chose to not dump Uribe and rather keep not playing him. He was fully healthy those last 2 months, and then both Mattingly and Coletti at the end of the year were like, well, he was a great teammate and all this stuff. It's like, all right, we get that. But then, you know, I did ask Coletti then, does Uribe have a spot on this team? And he just sort of like, I mean, sort of chuckled, you know.
That's he's like, the support you want to hear.
Exactly. Like, we'll see. Ha ha. Like, but I don't know. You never know. Every time I think Uribe is going to be cut or let loose, then he manages to not get cut. See, for me, if they sign a guy, they're at the 40 man right now. If they sign a guy now, they can make moves like that don't involve Uribe, or even if they were going to dump Punto, which I don't think they necessarily would. Those guys can get dumped like later in spring training. I think for now you would see like a Sellers get dropped, designated for assignment, or you know, someone on the fringes like that, and then
trading one of their starters be starting pitchers be the other possibility, because they're awfully long on the tooth there.
It's weird too. Like this is another weird situation. A couple weeks ago, I would have thought they would have traded at least one of Harang and Capuano heading before spring. They, I mean, I know like there's been articles, especially with Capuano and Coletti saying all the guys want to compete for a spot, and I think rightfully so. They see, you know, Lily coming back from shoulder surgery. Chad Billingsley he elected not to have surgery, and he's, you know, they're trying. Hey, if it works, great. He had two PRP injections and his elbow tear. I mean, it's obviously didn't go away, but if it's healed to a point where he can actually pitch, that's icing on the cake. But I can see where if you're a competitor, if you're Chris Capuano, you're going, I can beat those two guys for a spot, you know. I can see where he wants to sort of be in camp. But a couple weeks ago, I would have thought a trade was more likely, but then to sort of fill a need, right? Like, I thought they would have maybe traded one of those guys for like a lefty reliever, but then they signed JP Howell. So your bullpen is essentially set outside of maybe one spot. So unless you're trading him for like a specific bench guy, like if you see a right-handed bat on another bench and you can trade Harang or Capuano for him, maybe they do that. But otherwise, it's going to be interesting. Like they could, I didn't think it would be possible, but they could go into spring training with all eight of those guys under contract, and then they just sort of play it out in spring. And then people get hurt in spring training; it happens. So you never know. It sorts itself out more often than not.
Well, that's any other before we get off subject of injuries and move on to. We actually have an email, but we have an email before we had a show. That's very exciting. But one last injury I want to talk about, and I won't comment too much on it because I actually kind of want to go over the bullpen in a later episode, but is Kenley set to be recovered for spring training after the heart surgery?
It sounds like it. I mean, honestly, I don't know. Like, it's hard to fathom, you know, just sort of shrugging your shoulders and taking for granted heart surgery.
Yeah.
But from what it sounds like, it was as minor of a procedure as you can have. It was fairly routine. It was literally they go in and they just correct a problem that was causing his heart to beat irregularly, and he's had problems like the last 2 years because of that. And I think. There's a certain level of risk here in that, but I think that's sort of why they re-signed Brandon League. I mean, obviously you can argue they certainly probably overpaid for League, but hey, you know, they wanted the depth in the bullpen. They wanted another closer option. I can see the argument for doing that. And I think part of that is, okay, maybe let's just say Kenley might not be healthy. Then we have another guy we can go to with experience and all this kind of stuff. So I think Kenley will probably be okay, but I can see where they sort of want to give themselves a buffer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the surgery guys, I think I have to look at my list again. I think there were like 10 guys who had surgery at heading into the off season, either during the season or at the end of the season, and he's probably the one of the, on the lower end of like concern for me at least. But that said, that's just based off what I've heard. That's definitely something that first week of spring training will be interesting to see exactly where he's at.
Well, with that, we'll get to our first question. Did you want to plug the email address?
Oh yeah. So that, you know, obviously it's our first show. We are taping this on Monday, January 21st. Happens to be the date of the presidential inauguration, and it is our inaugural show.
Very fitting.
I teased been thinking about doing podcasts for a long time, and I've been more putting it off than anything. And then finally talking to Jacob in the last month or so, he sort of spurred me on to get it going, and that's why we're here and that's why we're doing it. So I'm glad. And last week I teased out the email address. If you want to get questions answered to some level of competence, TBLApodcast@gmail.com. That's TBLApodcast@gmail.com. Send those in. We'll get them. We'll get them answered in as timely a manner as we can. We're thinking about making this maybe a weekly podcast or so, and obviously we'll play it by ear and see how it goes and either make it more often or less often, depending on what you guys think. So get those questions in. But yeah, I teased it out last week, and we did have one, we did have one email, and I think I have it in front of me.
Okay. I'll, go ahead and read it and then let you reply, and I'll chime in after that.
Great.
This is from Zach in Santa Rosa, California. I recently made a bet with my friend who is a huge Giants fan, and I wanted to get your opinion on it. He was talking crap about the Dodgers, saying the Giants have made it to the World Series four times since the last time the Dodgers made it. Having a lot of confidence in our team and owners, I made the bet for a decent amount of money that the Dodgers will make it to the World Series in the next 5 years. Obviously, even good teams sometimes won't make it to a World Series, but I feel confident enough in my decision. Given our current team, our farm system, and our owner's ability to make moves, what do you think of the chances of this bet?
I don't want to. I mean, that's a tough.
You're going to
stares
it again. Careful.
Yeah, I really am. I mean, honestly, like, given the level of expenditure, there are absurd expectations right now on this team, and rightfully so. I mean, you look at them. I don't. You know, obviously the Giants won the World Series and blah blah blah. They won two of the last three, and they're a very good team. You could make an argument that the Dodgers could be the favorites on paper heading into this year. They probably are, but the Giants are right there with them. But the point is, Dodgers are, their payroll is going to be like 230 something million, and the ownership has shown no signs of like sort of slowing down. They keep saying we'll do whatever it takes to win. They're spending internationally. They're spending on infrastructure type things. Ideally, they're building something for a longer term. This team is sort of, the bulk of it is signed, you know, for the next 6 years, five, 6 years. Kershaw is obviously the dangler there, but he's on board for at least the next 2 years until they extend him, hopefully. But I would say that, I mean, we should get Jay Frank on to get a proper number on this, but I would say it's a decent bet that the Dodgers would be in the World Series in the next 5 years, just given the level of expectation. I think as they get closer and closer, they would probably do whatever it takes, like in a July move, or they'll try to improve the team whatever way is necessary. So making it once in 5 years, I mean, it sounds like – I'm not saying it's easy. It's certainly a lot of work and a lot of things that go into it, but I think it's something I would love to know how much he bet, but I would say he has a decent shot of winning that bet. I would say decent odds, a good 50-50 at least. So why not? Go for it.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder what a decent amount of money is, but I think the only fear you have in the Dodgers being able to do that is a few things. There are a couple other teams really primed to win. I'm thinking primarily of the Nationals to beat them out for the pennant, just over the long haul. And the Dodgers have a lot. They have a lot of, I don't want to say wild cards, but a lot of things between Hanley Ramirez and Adrian Gonzalez and Carl Crawford. You're expecting one of those guys to sort of pan out in the way you would expect. Maybe not superstar matching up with Kemp's production, but a solid bat either in front of him or behind him. And there's a possibility that, you know, that all kind of fans out. Agon's decline continues and the other two guys aren't able to really come back healthy. And if that, or I guess with Hanley, it's the decline as well. So there's a possibility that goes askew, and there's just no money can buy the bat the Dodgers really need to kind of take that next step. That said, with their sheer sort of insane depth at starting pitching and the farm system kind of backing that up with Zach Lee in the wings, you certainly would hope that they've got as good a shot as any other team in the NL. So might as well make that bet, especially over a half a decade span.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you on the Nationals, and I would throw the Reds in there too, yeah, probably for at least the next 2 years. And then, yeah, the Dodgers do have a lot of question marks. And, I mean, a part of it too, I'm sure Zach in Santa Rosa is probably, you know, starving for a World Series, because The Dodgers haven't been in a World Series. This is their 25th anniversary now. We're in 2013. It's been since 1988 since they went to the World Series. And on True Blue LA, been doing a series since January 1st of we're profiling every single player who played for that team. There were 38 players plus we're doing Tommy Lasorda. So that'll run 39 days. We're on today. Well, today's the 21st. So we've done 21 of the 39. So we're a little over halfway done. It's been a fun series so far in terms of getting, like, you know, you forget a lot of stuff that happened that year. I was 12 when it happened. I know you were younger, so you
didn't. I was two.
Yeah. So your memory of it is probably a little different than mine.
And that doesn't exist.
Exactly. So it's stirred up. It's been a really fun project, at least for me. I know Craig and Dave and Phil have chipped in and written some, and I know they've enjoyed it too. It's been a fun sort of look back. I'm planning more stuff throughout the season for the 88 team. It's probably borderline stalkerish on the 88 team, but it should be a fun year. That's kind of what we have going on this next week or so. I mean, I don't anticipate, unless the Dodgers sign someone, we're still a couple weeks away from sort of looking around at what every team in the division did. I do a little off-season review, but that's not going to come for a couple weeks. And plus, it gives the Diamondbacks a couple weeks to finally trade Justin Upton like they keep threatening to do. But yeah, so other than the 88 Dodgers stuff, I don't think a whole lot's going on this week. But you know, if something does happen, I'm sure it'll be up. But I think that'll do it for our first podcast. So thanks for all of you who are listening, and thanks to Jacob for getting me off my ass and finally getting us to do this. And I think it went well. What do you think, Jacob?
It did well. We sort of decided to do this at the end of January, sort of beginning of February, sort of the lull end of things, both on the site and on just in baseball season in general, to sort of pick up our sea legs. I used to do a few podcasts a few years ago, but it'll take a while to just build up the exact how often we do it, the kind of bits we do in the middle of it. So any feedback is greatly encouraged. You can, whether it be at the tblapodcast@gmail.com email address, or you can hit me up on Twitter at Jacob Birch, that's Birch with a U, and then comments on any of the posts that we do to post these up as well. Any criticism, kind or kindly worded, whether positive or negative, is greatly welcomed.
And any negative criticism, you know, as long as there's constructive, as long as it's constructive, we could take it. We're big boys. So.
Yeah. No, if it's not kindly worded, well, we'll just ignore you and feel then good about ourselves.
Then GFY, if you know what I mean. So. All right, well, that's it for us. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank you again.